Want applications that can live on-premises or in the cloud? Bring the flexibility of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of TechNet Radio in your Build Your Hybrid Cloud series. It's a new series that we're kicking off this month to discuss leveraging Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, and Windows Azure together to build out a hybrid cloud environment that extends from on-premises all the way up into the public cloud space securely. My name is Keith Mayer. I'm an IT pro technical evangelist at Microsoft, and I have with me today my good friend Matt Hester. Hi, Matt. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Keith. Thank you for having me onto the show. I'm also an IT pro technical evangelist like Keith. He's based in my old stomping grounds up in Ohio, and I'm back home in Texas. So it's kind of good that we still get to work together and have a lot of fun.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Matt, for joining us today. And it's been really exciting over the last several months since we had last launched our Build Your Private Cloud series a few months back on TechNet Radio. It's been lots of exciting new announcements around our whole devices and services ecosystem. And, Matt, I know I've been really excited when I talk with IT pros to see their reaction, because our ecosystem is really the only that I can think of that allows a consistent Windows platform message from devices ranging from phones to tablets or slates to back-end servers that are serving up our private cloud resources on Server 2012 all the way up into the public cloud space with Windows Azure. And you know, one of the things that's excited IT pros I've been talking to the most has really been our unifying technologies that consistently connect all of that together across identity and access, across management, across development and whatnot, by leveraging technologies like Windows Server Active Directory and Windows Azure Active Directory, System Center, Windows Intune, and Office 365, and our Visual Studio development tools platforms. Matt, what are you hearing from your IT pros around our ecosystem story?
I think fundamentally, well, I'm hearing the same exact things. I think we talk about the cloud in such a great way that a lot of people thought at first that that's all we wanted to do, that all we wanted to do was we wanted to be all in when it comes to the cloud, right? That's all we were going to do. But really, the magic starts to happen when you start pairing great devices and things that are on-premise with that hybrid cloud. Because quite frankly, you hear from our customers, I think they're kind of sick of hearing cloud, but now they're starting to understand, hey, wait, I can tie my on-premise data center, and I can treat that cloud as just a remote data center that I don't have in my environment for all the stuff that I do on-premise that I can do in the cloud that help me scale out. Yeah, exactly right. It's just another, what I like to think of, another bat tool in their bat belt to be able to run with those types of things. And at the end of the day, hybrid cloud is where a lot of our customers are starting to dip their toes in, because chances are if they have an iPad, an iPhone, an Xbox, or a Windows 8 device, or any kind of phone out in the world today, they're using cloud. They may not realize they're using cloud, but they're using cloud. Any picture they take might be stored up to their SkyDrive account, for example, or those types of things. So they're starting to see that value cross over from that personal life. Now all of a sudden they're starting to be value with that cloud thing in their business life. And that to me is what people are starting to finally grok around working with those types of technologies.
Exactly. And it allows IT pros to really concentrate on providing some really awesome, manageable, and secure end-user experiences of applications across a range of devices without having to worry about the nuances and intricacies of managing 10 or 12 different discrete platforms, because of the way that it all unifies and connects together. But over the last few months, really one of the most exciting set of announcements have been around our R2 wave of Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012. And in fact, just earlier this week, our product team announced the release to manufacturing of System Center 2012 R2. All of this is expected to be generally available in the mid-October timeframe. And so it's really a major set of new technology releases that empower us to deliver on exactly that hybrid cloud vision you were just mentioning, coming very soon to our private cloud and hybrid clouds today. And in this series, we'll be rolling through together each of these major releases across Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, the Windows Azure Pack, Hyper-V Recovery Manager running up in Windows Azure, with an opportunity to see how these new features can really extend the work that we began together a few months back in our Build Your Private Cloud series on the original releases of Windows Server 2012 and System Center 2012 Service Pack 1. How about you, Matt? Are you seeing, from IT pros you talked to, what's been their reaction on the R2 release wave?
I think they're excited about it. I think even from 2012, I still think there's a lot of excitement that it's coming from that, because R2 is coming roughly about a year later from our 2012 lead. So they're really excited about it. I think what we're most excited about, and that's why I liked your private cloud series, is that, hey, look, yeah, we're talking about as a company about devices and services and leveraging the cloud, but we're still making great operating systems like Windows Server 2012 and R2 coming soon that run on-premise all by themselves. But, oh, by the way, if you want to connect that to a service in the cloud, all of a sudden some great magic starts to happen. And that's what I see what's happening is customers say, can I run this in my data center without cloud? Yeah, you can. But oh, did you know that this was here for maybe backup, which is in preview right now, and you can do things that you just couldn't do before? And they're like, that's when they start seeing, you see the gear start to spin and get excited. And then when you talk about the automated processes and things that are happening with R2 and System Center, it's amazing to see those types of things that are happening. I think probably the most exciting thing we both saw at a tech ed at the same time was the Windows Azure Pack for the on-premise cloud, because people like the Azure portal. And if you're familiar with our Azure Public Services, it was a great portal. But all of a sudden, customers said, you know what? I want that in my private cloud. And we said, okay, done. And it requires a whole lot of System Center, a whole lot of Windows Server, but we can give you that kind of automated management in that private cloud. And oh, by the way, those building blocks are there that if you want to start tying together your public cloud services, it becomes almost seamless, which is amazing. Hats off to our product groups.
Exactly. And it was funny because when the R2 release was originally announced as a new wave back in the TechEd timeframe in early June, a lot of the IT pros that I initially talked to before they heard some of these new announcements on these major released features, a lot of their expectations were that the R2 wave was just another service pack with some minor fixes and enhancements. And even when we look at Windows Server 2012 R2 alone, once we started dipping into the details together, it was pretty evident to them that this is, as you mentioned, coming a year later as a major new release of the Windows Server platform, with end-to-end changes and enhancements around the virtualization stack, around storage and networking, all key components to building a private cloud foundation, but also some areas that relate back to server management and automation, web application platform, access and information protection, and virtual desktop initiatives. And the great thing, I think, is that although we've got all these great new features that we'll be rolling through over the next few episodes in the series as part of our private cloud foundation, Windows Server 2012 R2 is really built on the same basic scale of Windows Server 2012. The R2 release doesn't really change any of the great scaling that we brought into place with Windows Server 2012, so it still allows us to grow to a huge amount of logical processors and memory per physical host, a huge amount of virtual CPU and virtual RAM on a VM by VM basis. And I think in the industry, one of the most scalable clustered solutions for a virtualization platform today, with up to 64 nodes across a Hyper-V cluster on Server 2012 over the R2 release, supporting up to 8,000 VMs. I mean, it's just been an awesomely scaled product, and R2 is going to be able to leverage all of that as well for the new features. Do you agree, Matt? What are you seeing?
Well, you know, it's funny, is we talk about scalability, and people used to, I think, kind of still sometimes beat us up, are we a scalable solution? And then we show them these numbers, and two things happen. One, they go, oh, they're there already. And secondly, they go, I'm never ever going to need that much capacity. So they see that upper limit. And you and I know the reality. Like, yeah, who's ever going to have 4 terabytes in the server? Not many folks can do that. Now, Keith and I are willing to pilot that. So if any of you want to test that, feel free to send us a server with 4 terabytes. Keith and I will do a proper burn-in for you to make sure it works properly. But that's where they're seeing this. And then if they still don't buy this, we just say Windows Azure. And they, what do you mean? You want to talk about scalability? That's built on Windows Server 2012. It's built on Hyper-V. So I think we're finally getting over those arguments of scalability, and it's nice to know that people now are starting to see, I don't know, the way I like to think of it and the way I talk to customers and the feedback, it's kind of almost a data center with no limits. Not only no limits from a physical standpoint, but if I sprinkle in the cloud and all of a sudden I have no limits from what I can do for that infrastructure. And usually when we start talking about the cloud, we talk it at a price point or a cost point that's going to be cheaper than what they might be able to do on-premise. So they're seeing data center with no limits at a fairly attractive price because we know their budgets are shrinking or at least not growing, most of the IT pros I talk with. So that's where they start seeing that value of those technologies that I get this all out of the box. And if you look at our free Hyper-V server, that's exactly the same as our Hyper-V role in that. It's incredible. And people are like, you give that all away for free? Yeah. Now, you still have to have the Windows licensing and all that to go with it, but we give you the full feature set to be successful with that.
Yeah, definitely. And with the built-in capabilities that are either in our free hypervisor, as you had mentioned, Matt, or in Server 2012 across compute virtualization, storage virtualization, and network virtualization, we've seen customers implement some really interesting reference designs successfully within their environment to reduce the cost of deploying a private cloud foundation. Leveraging technologies like our integrated storage virtualization storage spaces, being able to take advantage of commodity enterprise SAS disks that are in a standard JBOD enclosure attached to a few highly available Hyper-V hosts clustered together. You can have a very attractive scaled-up foundation. And then certainly from a scale-out standpoint, if you need to grow into an even larger environment with dozens of Hyper-V hosts, you can put a Windows Server 2012 or 2012 R2 continuously available scale-out file server cluster in front of that storage as essentially as a SAN-like headend that exposes that storage over our new SMB 3.0 protocol to a larger number of Hyper-V hosts or other hosts that can access SMB shares as well. So as we think about these reference architectures, over the next few minutes, we're going to talk about, from a storage perspective first, how Server 2012 R2 enhances this into an even richer experience. And then once we get through storage in today's episode, in our next episode, we'll come back and talk about network virtualization and enhancements. Network's another key important point of product. And in our episode after that, we'll talk about the enhancements around compute virtualization with Server 2012 R2. And once we get through that, we'll roll into those other components we talked about a bit earlier in terms of System Center 2012 R2 enhancements, Windows Azure PAC, Windows Azure Hyper-V Recovery Manager in future episodes. So we've got a lot of value coming into play in the next forthcoming episodes as part of this series. So we've gone through an introduction to what it is we're going to be talking about in this series. Let's kind of hunker down a bit and talk about storage in Windows Server 2012 R2. You know, Matt, there's been a lot of improvements around storage specifically in Server 2012 R2, and I think that's because a lot of the IT pros I hear from, they have storage as one of the biggest hard costs within their data center environment, and it's growing year over year. Matt, from the IT pros that you talk, what are you hearing when you talk about storage and Server 2012 R2 in their environments?
Well, I think it's the realization, and you hit that. There's two things you put on that slide, and hopefully everybody didn't miss them. Was we're talking about using storage spaces with hard drives you have laying around. You don't have to go to a particular vendor and get locked into the price, whatever they want to charge you per terabyte or per gigabyte or however you buy storage. So they're starting to see that as an advantage. Now, that may not be something that we see in the on-premise data centers, that they still might rely on a high-end SAN for maybe some faster speed and performance than get the hardware, although we're getting closer with our software. We're not, you know, to be fair, we're not there yet, but for those brand offices, for those smaller areas where they're going to need more data storage, that's where this comes in amazingly well. And I remember this when we first started doing this with Server 2012, and somebody called me out and they says, Matt, that slide says continuously available. And I'm like, yeah. And they said, in 2008, it said highly available. I said, yeah, there's a big difference there. And it started off a whole conversation about uptime and being able to make sure that storage is always available to the people that we have and have that kind of redundancy, and that we can do those with our technologies, you know, in what I would call very simple ways, right? And we're talking about a hard drive that's been provisioned as a part of a storage pool that has a virtual drive laying on top of it that we can then use as its one big giant volume. And oh, by the way, we can make that a part of a clustered shared volume. And then all of a sudden, the story just gets bigger and bigger, and it all started with just a basic drive. And I think that's what's beautiful about it, is it is built on simple foundational principles and being able to do everything through the Magic software.
Well, and Matt, I think you hit it right on the head with our storage spaces and storage virtualization in Server 2012. It was a great mid-tier solution, but in Server 2012 R2, with some of the performance improvements and extensibility that we've seen, it's actually neck and neck performance-wise to much more expensive Fibre Channel and ICE Guzzi storage nowadays. For instance, a lot of the features that have been improved in SMB 3.0 for Server 2012 R2 were around optimizing SMB 3.0 better for a high level of random I/O activity that you typically get in a virtualized environment, so that it can scale past 10 gig Ethernet, if you can believe it, into 40 gig Ethernet or 56 gig InfiniBand. And when you start looking at that in comparison to multiple 8 or 16 gig fiber channel adapters, the performance can actually not only be the same at a lower cost, but in many cases exceed the performance of expensive fiber channel solutions. The other area that I'm seeing a lot of interest around in Server 2012 R2 is our automated storage tiering, which allows us to easily combine SSD and spinning disk together into an automatically tiered storage pool, so that your most frequently accessed blocks of data that are being read and written get optimally stored in SSD for fast retrieval, where the less frequently accessed blocks get moved down to hard disk storage. And that's really been a lot of interest from IT pros I've been talking to, because they realize that although they may have terabytes of storage in their data center today, generally most environments only have 15 to 20% of their total storage being actively accessed. So by using automated storage tiering, it allows the back-end storage itself to adapt itself to the data patterns that you're accessing against it.
Yeah,
deduplication of open files is another area. You know, if you think about virtual machines and virtual hard disks, most of us deploy a common base of virtual machine images for all of our VMs based on the same operating system and potentially even the same application files. With Server 2012 R2, it can dedupe those VHD files down to single instance of common blocks of storage, even if the VMs are online and running. It doesn't have to wait for files to be closed like it did in the Server 2012 release. And the last piece that I really like is the performance improvements we've made around automated storage rebalancing. So in a clustered environment, as your storage patterns shift from VM to VM, from one clustered shared volume to another, the back-end storage cluster actually rebalances and adapts towards those needs to provide you with the overall best performance without you having to do any reconfigurations or storage live migrations or storage vMotions to have that happen. So some really cool capabilities. Well, I think, Matt, we've been talking about a lot of these capabilities. What do you think? Does it make sense to maybe jump into a lab environment and show everybody how some of these features work?
Yeah, definitely. And to boil down what Keith just talked about around our storage, storage has become a first-class citizen. It started becoming a first-class citizen in Windows Server with 2012. But, you know, especially with storage pools, I always like to point out, we said don't mix SSD with anything else, because it'll slow down the performance. But we solved that problem with software in R2. And SMB really is that glue. You know, not a lot of people think about the stuff under the covers that make it go well, but SMB is really that glue that kind of started making people think, hey, wait, I can use 2012 as my server for storage? Yeah, the answer is yes now, as long as we have the hard drive space to do it. It's something that the software can build in. It's almost, I hesitate to say it, but I'll say it anyways, it's almost like the Server 2012 is its own software SAN, right? It's its own version of a software version of a SAN, and you just need to provide it the hardware, whatever you have laying around your data center. So yeah, Keith, I want folks to see this, because it's not enough for you and I to tell people about this, but actually show them how it works.
Okay, great. Well, let's go over to the lab, and we'll meet up there. Well, Matt, here we are in our lab environment, and we're looking at a Server 2012 R2 preview host that we're using for storage. We're in Server Manager in the File and Storage Services page, same place we go in Server Manager 20 in Windows Server 2012 to work with storage pools. But you'll notice something a little different. Over under Physical Disks, our R2 host actually has a mix of SSD and spinning disk all in one list on this server. So What the tiered storage allows me to do is to select all of those disks and create a new storage pool. Now, I've already done that, saved a little bit of time in our demo. Wasn't really a whole lot of magic to that other than giving our storage pool a name and having it get created. And that brings all of those disks together into one raw pool. But because of the media types, SSD versus hard disk differences, as we create virtual disks or LUNs on top of the storage pool, we can turn on automated tiering of blocks of storage as it's being read and written to those virtual disks. So in order to take advantage of that in our raw storage pool, we would want to create one or more virtual disks. So I'm just going to right-click on our tiered storage pool, select the new virtual disk choice from our right-click menu, and step through our new virtual disk wizard, selecting our storage pool and providing our wizard with a name for our new virtual disk. And you'll notice a new checkbox option in R2 to create storage tiers on the virtual disk. So I'm going to check that. That's where the magic starts for telling the server about how to interact with these storage tiers. You'll notice that when I check that option and progress through the wizard, as we go along, it'll give me some additional choices for my various storage tiers.
Well, and one thing I always like to point out on this is when you get to this storage type, and I get to ask this question all the time, when you click on mirror, it says two or three disks. Now, wait a second. Every knowledge test that we had back when you and I were coming in IT, mirror is two disks and two disks only. So talk about that third disk for a second, because I think that throws some people, wait, is that really a mirror, a third disk, huh? What?
That's Actually, the mirroring approach that we use is a bit different from what it used to be back in the days of earlier Windows Server releases. Instead of doing mirroring at a disk level, it's actually doing mirroring across the storage pool at more of a block level. It's actually very similar in many ways to the storage architecture that we use out in our Windows Azure public cloud storage service, where as we write blocks of data across this virtual disk, I have six disks in my storage pool, it will ensure that at least three copies of every block of data is located on three separate physical disks. And as it's doing that, if you have multiple enclosures of disks, as long as they support the SAS Enclosure Awareness Protocol standard, server storage spaces will also look for disks in separate enclosures to mirror against those blocks of data so that an entire enclosure doesn't take any of your data offline. So it is pretty intelligent. And obviously having all of those mirrored copies of those blocks of data gives you some great read performance as well, because the read requests can take advantage of multiple copies of each block.
Yep. And so I always like to point that out. So.
Yep, definitely. I'll select mirroring, and I'll use the three-way mirror approach. And I can select either a thin or a fixed provisioning piece. And then you'll notice that when I get to my size, because I've chosen to use automated storage tiering, it's asking me not for the size of my virtual disk, but to specify the size of each tier. So I can customize this. And if I wanted to create a 300 gig virtual disk, but have 100 gig of that come out of SSD and 200 gig come out of HDD across those tiers, I could do that. Automatically, the storage spaces subsystem will optimize placement of the data across these two tiers based on how active that data is. And you can simply step through the process of going ahead and creating that and walking through the process of treating it like any other virtual disk once it's created. The storage tiering is transparent to me. I don't have to do anything special to work with files on it. I can still format volumes as NTFS file systems and use it in much the same way that I'd use any other type of physical disk on my server system.
Cool. We introduced with 2012, and I get asked this question a lot. Where do you see, because we introduced a new file system, because I think most people are familiar with NTFS. But one of the things when we create this volume and are actually formatting it, for folks that aren't familiar with 2012, they're going to see a new option in REFS, the Resilient File System, which I like to think of as the automatic defragger and check disk option. Fixes everything. Just you don't have to worry about the hard drives breaking anymore. But in reality, it's a lot more. Where do you see IT pros? I haven't seen personally a lot of adoption with REFS yet. I see a lot of people kind of kicking the tires, dipping their toe in the water. Keith, what do you see with the RAFS stuff?
I see RAFS mainly being used by IT pros that are trying to create large file server data volumes that potentially might be used for large document stores, large archive folders, large backup destinations or whatnot. Now in R2, the R2 release of Server 2012, there have been some enhancements with REFS as well. With the base 2012 edition of Windows Server, REFS was offered as an alternate file system choice for some of those selected use cases like archiving volumes and whatnot, but it didn't support broader use in a cluster as a volume that could be placed on a cluster shared volume. One of the changes that the R2 release brings is that REFS can be placed now on a cluster shared volume and because of that made highly available. So that may open up some additional use cases moving forward. I do still see NTFS, though, as the general rule of thumb, as still the general purpose operating system that most IT pros are broadly deploying in their data centers today.
Awesome.
Great question. Yeah, great question, though. So I've walked through the process of creating a new virtual disk. You can see how easy it is to implement those storage tiers. The features that we have in relationship to storage aren't just at the physical server level for the Windows file servers that are serving up our storage. They're also within the virtual environment as well. We've extended some big improvements around storage management there. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to drop over into my hypervisor environment. And switch over to Hyper-V Manager. So from a storage perspective, when we're working with individual virtual machines, a couple things that are really key is we want to keep those virtual machines online as much as possible. And certainly in Server 2012 and prior, we had the ability to add new virtual hard disks to virtual machines. But now in Server 2012 R2, we can go one step further. We can resize virtual hard disks on the fly even while virtual machines are running. So I'm going to pick one of my virtual machines here. I'll right-click and jump into settings of that virtual machine. And you'll notice that I've got a number of virtual SCSI hard disks using the new VHDX format. And if I wanted to resize one of these to make it larger, well, all I need to do while the VM is still running is select that hard disk, click on Edit, and I can step through the process of expanding that or compacting it. So I can not only grow the virtual hard disk with the VM still online, I can also shrink it down to reclaim perhaps some unused space that previously occupied a volume inside the VM. Maybe I deleted the volume after moving the data elsewhere and I want to reclaim that space. I can do all of that while the VMs are online.
And what's funny, if you're familiar with Hyper-V today, we've done those options before. Compact and expand's not new, but the fact that the system's running while you're compacting and expanding, now that is new, and that actually is pretty cool stuff.
Yep, exactly. No, definitely. The other piece that is new from a storage perspective with Server 2012 R2 for virtual machines is the ability to do storage QoS, so that if you have some virtual machines that have a very active disk I/O footprint and others that are less active on the same host, you can actually enable on a per VM and per virtual hard disk basis storage QoS management and set minimum and maximum storage IOPS thresholds so that you can make sure that your most critical VMs have the storage IOPS that they need available to them when they're interacting with the storage subsystem.
So where do you see that being really used? I mean, because most of the times when people think of quality service, they think of quality service for networking packets and maybe for high streaming video and so on. What are some scenarios you see some people where they might actually turn this on and does it really have any performance hit against them other than we're controlling the speed? Because normally you just want things to go as fast as they possibly can. So where would you see people using this, Keith?
Well, very much like in a network environment where you may have lots of VMs that are sending lots of network traffic across a finite amount of network bandwidth that you have in your pipe. If we think about storage as being a back-end network between your hypervisor hosts and your storage platform, that back-end network also has a finite capacity based on how many adapters and the speeds of those adapters that you're using to connect your hosts to their storage. So if you have very large Hyper-V hosts that have VMs that are generating lots of storage traffic, just like in a network environment where you may not want one VM to steal all the network bandwidth away from all the other VMs, you may want that same thing on your storage backend as well. So what this storage QoS allows is for an IT pro to set up a predictable level of storage service for each of the VMs, particularly focusing on the VMs that have the most critical need, perhaps heavy-duty database servers, Exchange servers, or SharePoint servers that are virtualized on a Hyper-V host, and you're trying to make sure that their storage bandwidth to that back-end storage cluster is not being obscured by other VMs that may be less critical in your environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Great, great. In addition to these features, you may also recall that in Server 2012, we had the ability to also do VM guest clustering. We could use iSCSI or Virtual Fiber Channel so that if we not only wanted to cluster together our hosts into a highly available set of hosts, but we also wanted to cluster our virtual machines together for faster failover times, we could do that. And that worked great, but the challenge was that in larger environments, working with all those iSCSI or Virtual Fiber Channel connections into a large number of guests that you're clustering together got to be a little complex. So in Server 2012 R2, we're implementing simplified VM guest clustering. We don't have to worry about iSCSI or Virtual Fiber Channel to our guests anymore, because each of the virtual hard disks, each of the VHDX files that guests are using, can now be shared across multiple VMs to form a guest cluster. And the way that we would do that, if I jump back into my Hyper-V host, you'll notice that I've got on the same property page where I had QoS management, the ability to enable virtual hard disk sharing for each of the VHDX files that this VM is using, so that another VM could be placed in the same cluster and see that as virtual shared storage. This makes setting up guest clusters extremely easy. Now, you'll note that the option is grayed out currently because my VM is running. This is an option that needs to be set up while the VM is in a powered off state. And then the idea would be you'd share those VHDXs, power on your VMs, and cluster them together for highly available guest workloads.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to ask that because it appeared to be gray, but I know that that's a running virtual system. But normally this would be something you would do anyways, right? This would be in the normal setup procedure because you'd have this planned out of kind of how which ones you want to share, which ones you don't want to share. And people are probably going to put some thought behind the planning behind that.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the storage features that we've been talking about in Server 2012 and Server 2012 R2 for sharing highly available storage to Hyper-V hosts is not only restricted to Windows platform Hyper-V hosts, because the same storage clustering capabilities that we have on Windows Server can also serve up that storage via iSCSI or NFS protocols, industry standard protocols that other hosts have the ability to access as well. And we're seeing a lot of interest in particular with our NFS server support that's built in to Windows Server 2012 and Windows Server 2012 R2 in private cloud environments so that you can put in place a very cost-effective storage backend. And even if you're not ready to switch over your virtualization hosts from VMware ESXi to Hyper-V just yet, you can still benefit from those lower storage costs and high performance that Windows Server 2012 Storage Spaces Clusters provides by exposing that storage via NFS mount points. You can actually take the same storage and expose it via SMB3 to Windows or Hyper-V hosts and NFS, and expose it via NFS to VMware hosts. This can also make your eventual migration to Hyper-V much quicker, because one of the most time-consuming pieces of any VM migration from one virtualization host platform to another is the time that it takes to copy those VMs back and forth between different storage LUNs. In this fashion, the VMs are already sitting on the same storage that Hyper-V hosts could see through SMB3.0. It makes that whole migration process much quicker.
And what really makes this great, folks, is that this is all built into server. This isn't an extra cost. We don't make you, you know, if you buy a server license, you get all of this. I mean, that's an important to note about this, is that most of the folks, especially if you're using VMware, probably already have the Windows licenses in place to be able to start taking advantage of some of these technologies. And what we're trying to do is maybe not so much talk about, you know, Microsoft Hypervisor or VMware. We want to try to position our technologies, and hopefully you've seen this coming for a couple of years now. This is an and statement. This is, hey, VMware and Microsoft working together in a very effective, cost-effective, very performant way. Not only bubbles here in the server, and I know you're going to talk about it later in the services, Keith, but I want to make sure people are aware of where we're coming from here. Yeah, as Microsoft employees, we'd love to run you a Hyper-V, but we know the reality. People run VMware. And if we can help save costs for that infrastructure by using Windows Server and maybe another capacity than Hyper-V, it's great. And oh, by the way, if you were to sprinkle in System Center here, System Center works well with VMware and Microsoft technologies. So, folks, when you think about these technologies, just don't think about it. It's an or situation with us. It's most definitely an and situation. As Microsoft employees, with Keith and I, want you to be solely on Hyper-V. Yeah, we're Microsoft employees, but our technologies are being positioned in such a way that you don't have to be an or. You can be an and. You can make these technologies work together with and save your data center money. And that's what we're trying to focus in on.
Exactly. You know, what we've seen out in the field for the last several years is that existing enterprise organizations have a huge investment in their data center foundation, their private cloud foundation, the fabric across compute, storage, and networking that makes up their data center. Nobody's going to go through the process of implementing an entirely new greenfield data center just to take advantage of private cloud. Private cloud, in order to be effective, needs to accommodate the hypervisor hosts you're using today and offer options to move to new hypervisor platforms when there's value in doing so. Same thing with storage, so that you're not locked in to a single hypervisor, a single storage solution, a single set of applications or operating systems. It becomes truly a fabric that can be leveraged and grown in the future to accommodate to whatever your business needs become. And with the maturing of Windows Server 2012 and now Windows Server 2012 R2, as well as our System Center product offerings, we've seen more and more environments taking that approach because of the modular ability that our products offer for being able to determine where within your existing data center environment the most value can be offered, and beginning to start there to solve the biggest pain points, and then along the way looking at other opportunities to leverage that technology once you begin licensing Windows Server 2012. Let's face it, there's tons of features in Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2 and System Center that an enterprise organization can take advantage of once they make the initial purchase. Well, so we've gone through storage over the last bit in this episode and talked about some of the new storage enhancements in Windows Server 2012 R2. In our next episode, we'll be talking a bit more about network enhancements. Network is another important key aspect of a private cloud foundation. And then we'll be moving into compute and virtualization enhancements in forthcoming episodes as well, as we move down that path of building out our private and hybrid cloud environments. So today we've looked at the first component of leveraging Windows Server 2012 R2 to expand out our private cloud or hybrid cloud foundation around storage. Some of the great news, though, is if you're interested in learning more about Windows Server 2012 R2 and our virtualization and cloud technologies, you can actually do it for free. You can build your lab up in the cloud, no hardware necessary other than a web browser and a remote desktop client, by leveraging our Windows Azure free trial program. By navigating out to the link that you see on your slide, aka.ms/cloudlab, you'll see a set of step-by-step key scenarios for building out Windows Server 2012, 2012 R2, disaster recovery scenarios, on-demand dev test scenarios, even Linux up in the cloud using our virtualization technologies to gain a better understanding of our entire ecosystem of offerings in cloud and virtualization technologies. Well, Matt, I wanted to thank you for joining us today and helping us step through the process around storage.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you for having me, and I'm glad we got to talk about some of the things that you and I are both seeing from our IT pro communities when we get in front of the audiences and some of those common questions that you can actually talk to and show people. And folks, this is real technology. We're not just making this stuff up, that there's so many things server can do. Storage is just one of those enhancements. So check it out the next time you're looking to go buy a SAN. Say, hey, wait, I have a 2012 license. I might be able to do this with all the stuff I have laying around.
Great. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for this episode as well. I hope to see you in future episodes. This episode is part of our Build Your Cloud series. To catch the rest of the series, including all the previous recordings up until today, feel free to connect with us over at aka.ms, Build Your Cloud. Thanks so much. Hope to see you in the next episode.